Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, K.L. Wells.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today. I am very honored and privileged to be with Jeff Bristol, owner of Fitness Quest 10 in San Diego. And I have to tell you, you are in for a treat today because Jeff is a model of what it means to be a success story during a time of crisis and adversity. So, Jeff, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Steiner. Steiner on this interview today. And I'm honored to be here too, because Jen's a longtime friend of mine. And so I just want to thank you, Jen, and Voices in Courage for having me on today. So
I used to intern for this guy, so I have to be good during this interview, right? Before we dive into kind of your background and everything, I want to tell everybody, you know, why I chose to have you on this segment today. You are in your ninth year of recovery.
Yep.
Ninth year of recovery.
I celebrated 9 years.
February 10th. Congratulations. Wow. That's a huge accomplishment. And why you're here today is because I see you every single day show up with energy, positivity, commitment, self-discipline. And I don't know if you could say that you were in the same place over a decade ago. And there was a lot of things that you had to go through and experience and then come out on the other side. And so I'd like to kind of share your success story for people who may not be in that same spot right now with their addict or alcoholic. And I just want to show everybody you're a sign of hope. And I think we all need that sometimes. So before we dive into the tough stuff, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are now and what it is that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the co-owner and general manager of Fitness Quest 10. Been here at Fitness Quest 10 in Scripps Ranch, San Diego for 10 years. And I came to work here 10 years ago when I was newly sober. And I worked at the front desk. When I got a job here, I worked at the front desk. And I transitioned to become a trainer here and was a busy trainer there for 5-6 years. And then I transitioned into management and worked as a general manager here for several years. And then in just the last year and a half, became a co-owner with Todd Durkin, my business partner. And he's a guy who's a mentor and a friend of mine and somebody who I've learned a lot from over the years. And it's just an honor to, be an owner here of this, at this place that really did have a big impact on my life. And it continues to do so today. And I have a team of about 30 people here at Fitness Quest 10, everything from, we have trainers. We have about 15 trainers. We have 4 massage therapists, 2 Pilates instructors, several directors of first impression at the front desk. And then we have a chiropractor here, a physical therapist, a naturopathic doctor. So we're a whole team of health and wellness professionals that work with all walks of life, moms, dads, kids, retirees, people recovering from injury, professional athletes. Jen knows the community here at Fitness Quest 10 really well through her background in fitness. And so, yeah, we have just an amazing community and culture here. And I spend a lot of time here and I pour into the people, because they pour right back into me. And in so many ways that, really helps me thrive, And so I'm here a lot and late, and you can tell Friday, usually I'm like starting to lose my voice. Friday's usually I like
100%.
Friday's not my best day for interviews because I could barely talk by then. So
you've got a lot of responsibilities. So that's a lot to handle. And so with that being said, I don't know if you could say the same thing as of maybe 15-ish, 20 years ago. And so you've got a totally different picture now. And so if you could paint a picture of what life was like for you in your 20s.
Absolutely. So Can I give you a little background on my childhood also? Yeah.
Please, so just
a little background on my childhood and stuff is that, you know, I grew up here. My parents are from San Diego. I grew up in Temecula, and I had one of three, of the oldest of three. And my parents, you know, I had a great childhood and upbringing. Went to private school when I was younger, went to a public high school where, and I played sports all through my childhood, you know, so many different sports, and really excelled in wrestling as I got older in high school, and then got a scholarship to go wrestle in college. And so my childhood was very, you know, great. I have just a great experience as a child. Parents, loving parents.
Yeah, I've seen your parents around.
Yeah, they're part of
very friendly and approachable.
Yeah, they are. They definitely are. And, you know, they gave me and my brother and my sister just a great childhood, and played a lot of sports, had a lot of opportunities for activities and education and all that stuff, and ended up getting a scholarship to wrestle at UC Davis. And, you know, because of my lifestyle that I started to develop in high school and college, which was more of like recreational partying, and I was a very social guy. And so, you know, the drinking and the smoking weed and trying other recreational drugs started at an early age, right? Like my freshman year in high school is the first time I smoked weed. And, you know, that was talk about, you know, kind of one thing leads to the next. And,
yes,
you know, maybe it doesn't for everybody, but for me, it did. You know, like I smoked weed for the first time, like right in the beginning of my freshman year. And as soon as my personality and the effect it had on me was like, wow, like I like that. That was fun. Let's do it again. Let's try this time, you know. And I was always attracted to the party scene and older people. And, you know, so my personality combined with my experiences and my net, you know, the people I hung with in high school led me to, you know, try a lot of different, you know, start drinking and drugging hard at an early age, you know? And so despite having good grades and being a good athlete and getting a scholarship and all that stuff, I was still partying and doing, you know, drinking and using a lot more.
So you're functioning well.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a, you know, very high functioning, I think, alcoholic addict at a young age, which I got away with for a while, which, you know, a lot of us addicts and alcoholics do. Mm-hmm. And until kind of like it caught up with me in my early 20s, my junior, senior year in college was when really, like, even me suffering some consequences in high school and college, I got a DUI in high school. You know, I got caught with weed, you know, I had all these little like red flags, but it was always that my performance in other areas and my ability to talk my way out of anything.
Yeah, you've got a great personality.
Many talks with teachers and principals and coaches and policemen or women, you know, and could definitely talk my way out of everything. That's like a skill that many addicts and alcoholics master. And I was definitely one of those people. But, you know, the house of cards kind of, you know, crashing down my junior, senior year in college, where I was there at UC Davis on scholarship and starting to miss practices, and my friends and people were, you know, my coach talked to my parents, and, you know, it was just so apparent to everybody that I was having real problems. And at that point I had started using hard drugs, like, you know, it moved from beer and weed to, you know, coke and pills to like heroin and meth. Like, and that's the progression. Wow. I went through.
Wow, Jeff. I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah. And so by the time I was a junior, senior in college, even though I was at UC, like from the outsider perspective, it's like, oh, Jeff Bristol, he's at UC Davis on a wrestling scholarship. And, you know, he was a standout kind of like student athlete. But a lot of people didn't know my lifestyle and where it had brought me and what I was doing behind everyone's back. And it was so apparent that something was wrong with me, but a lot of people didn't really know the extent of everything. And so my disease progressed pretty fast and hard in those 8 years through high school and college. So by the time I was a senior year in college, Mike kind of did an intervention on me and said, hey, like, you need to go get help. Like, school and wrestling, everything's kind of, you know, off the table right now. And that was the first time I went to rehab, was my senior year in college. I took a quarter off and went to rehab in Palm Springs. And I can remember like talking with my therapist at that rehab in Palm Springs. And, well, you know, first thing that happened is my parents sent me to a rehab in Riverside before I ended up in Palm Springs. This was the same trip to rehab. I went to this place in Riverside, and, you know, there were some people at that rehab that were there, it was like also like court appointed program and stuff. So there's all these people that were from different walks of life than me, right? People that weren't in college and scholarships, and they were, you know, there because they'd come from jail or, you know. And I remember being at that rehab in Riverside, and I called my parents as a 22-year-old kid and saying, like, here was a kid who grew up in upper middle class, whatever. And I was in college and all this stuff. And I just like, was like, I don't belong here. Did not see the similarities at that time, you know, like, so my parents, because of, you know, that ability to talk my family through anything, is like, they yanked me out of that, or after a lot of whatever, they took me out of that rehab and put me at this other rehab in Palm Springs. That was, you know, my parents, from throughout my whole battle with addiction, dumped thousands of dollars into trying to save me. Right. And that was kind of the start of that. I went to that rehab in Palm Springs, and I was too young and wasn't able to even accept anything on my responsibility or what was going on with me at the time.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time I went to treatment, and that was the beginning of a long, hard battle with drugs and a lot of trips to rehab and in and out of jail, overdoses, and, you know, a lot of pain and suffering, you know, for obviously for myself, because I was the one doing it to myself. But, you know, just as much as, you know, like, the addiction and alcoholism is a family deal. It's never just one person that's going through it, right? It's like all the people in the periphery, the moms, dads, brothers, sisters, the people that are trying to help or save that person, you know, that get dragged through the mess. And so that's kind of what my family went through, you know, through my 20s, where it was just so much up and downs, you know, go to rehab, get out, a little bit of hope. Oh, maybe it's different this time. And then back in jail, and then, you know, overdose, and is he going to die? And just, it was terrible. Almost killed me, almost killed my parents, you know, like physically, emotionally, they were just like zombies, you know, for a long time. And so, you know, by the grace of God or however, you know, there's no answer to this. Otherwise this wouldn't be such a pandemic, like literally the pandemic of alcoholism and addiction. It's like, I'm so grateful to be sober today, because, you know, there were times in my 20s where I didn't have even thought that I would, looking down the road and thinking about a family and a career and purpose and confidence and all those things that come with sobriety, that wasn't even a thought.
Right.
And so, you know, just to be here today and be able to do this, I'm, you know, just grateful. And this is why I do this. And, you know, it brings me back to those days, because it does, you know, I'm 9+ years, I'm looking at 10 years of sobriety and all these great things in my life today. And it's hard to go back to like that. I'm 38. Now I want to try and go back to like that 25, 26 year old Jeff, where I was in the freaking, like, in the depths, and my parents, and, you know, but it, going through those things really did give me a perspective and experience on life, you know, that you don't have unless you go through some
stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents
too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I listened, I told you this morning, I watched the podcast. I listened because we've talked about my tech abilities and how lacking they are. So I listened to all the podcasts.
I get you on that.
And I actually wrote down a bunch of the different things that you said. And one of the things that you said was that you can't scare somebody into sobriety. And I don't know if you recall saying that on one of the podcasts, but can you talk a little bit about that? Because there's so much to your story, because it doesn't sound like there's maybe one event that just totally altered and changed your life. It sounds like a bunch of, you know, a buildup of a bunch of different things. So for the parents who have decided, okay, this, my son or daughter needs to go into a rehab facility, speak on the part of, you can't scare someone to sobriety, because we went through the same exact thing where it was our choice. Tucker went into a rehab facility, but it was unsuccessful. Can you talk a little bit about that point for parents?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, like, you know, for somebody that's drinking or using, and I can even remember, my memory's terrible, honestly, from my 20s. I think it's probably a lot of the, you know, all the drinking and drugging from my earlier years. But I do remember, like, that first treatment I went to, that place in Riverside, where I felt like I was, you know, there was guys from jail there.
Yeah.
And I totally didn't think I related to them because of my background, and, you know, but a couple of years later, I was in jail, you know, and doing the same stuff. And, but, I remember one of the people at that rehab, like showing me a picture of my family, you know, and saying like, you know, hey, but that's like the thing about drugs and alcohol. When somebody's in active alcoholism or addiction, you can't say, Jeff, if you don't stop using heroin, you could die. That thought doesn't stop the addict from going to get their drugs or going to the liquor store or whatever. That the mind is hijacked. Mind is hijacked by the physical urge and the mental obsession and all the physiological and brain chemistry crap that happens when you're drinking or using and you're addicted or you're dependent on something. It's not that, like, if you tell them they're going to die, if you tell them they're going to lose their kids, if you tell them this, it's like, that's not going to necessarily change something. Like, maybe, yeah, like, they're, you know, if you, rock bottoms are a thing that people talk about in their disease, right? Like, different people suffer different, like, this person's rock bottom could be getting a DUI, or this person rock bottom could be when they, you know, almost lost their kids or whatever. And so those things do happen, but it's not the answer to,
right. So it really has to be the addict's choice. Is that kind of what you're saying? Is that what you're leaning towards? Or
I mean, I think it definitely, there has to be something that comes from within the person that's in the experience. It can't be, trust me, if it would have been I know there's a lot of people out there that don't have this network of support, family support, community support, whatever. Like, I had this freaking army,
yes.
Parents, siblings, girlfriend, wife, like, you know, like, that were coaches, relatives, everybody that was trying, you know, to, you know, talk to me or support me or help, you know, like,
right.
And so, you know, it definitely is different for every person. And, you know, there is no one clear answer, but I think, you know, to the parents that are struggling, like, obviously, like, you gotta hold on to that hope. Mm. And you gotta kind of, like, sometimes love from a distance. Mm. And I can't even imagine, because I haven't been there. I've, like, witnessed it with my parents. I've witnessed it with other friends and people that I know, clients and friends of mine that have lost their sons to overdoses and stuff. You know, it's like, and before that time, it's like, how do you love your kid, but also have that boundary that you can't save them. You can't let them continue to, like, ruin your life. You, like, so there really is not, like, a formula for success.
There's no roadmap. There's no roadmap at all. That's what's so frustrating about this disease, is that when it's placed in your lap, whether it's the addict, an alcoholic, or the family, it's all, first of all, everybody's different and everybody's path and journey is different. And I want to talk a little bit about your parents, because I've seen them from a distance, and one day I'm going to go up and introduce myself.
You absolutely have to. Yeah.
So, but I see how they walk through the space, and I can see how proud they are of you. I mean, it's just very apparent. And if you could touch on people who are still in the midst of the chaos, like, for me, I called it a storm, where it took years for me to take my foot out of the tornado and stop it. Mm-hmm. Because we get so used to this chaos going round and round and round that almost to a point we get comfortable, because This is what we're familiar with, right? Mm-hmm. So for the families, even spouses or, you know, siblings or friends who are in a really bad, chaotic spot, and they're currently being hurt by the actions of the addict, can you talk about how they, you know, you don't really realize in that state of mind what you're really doing? It took Tucker 2 years for his brain really to get back to normal, functioning normally. So can you talk a little bit about when you're in the state of active addiction, you don't really recognize the hurt and the impact that you're placing on the family members.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that addict or alcoholic cannot really see or have that insight on, it wasn't until I got clean and sober that I could really even grasp. Obviously I was remorseful and shamed, and, you know, I didn't want to be putting my family through the hurt I was. And there were so many long talks and meaningful times where I spoke with 100% truth, you know, like, that to my parents or whoever else, that I, like, I don't want to, like, live like this anymore. I don't want to do this. I'm going to change. I'm going to change. This is it. I'm going to turn, you know, like, but it was the same little bit of hope and promises, promising up one side, down the other, that things are going to be different. And then they don't change. And so, like, you know, a person that's in their disease cannot have the insight on the impact or their damage that they're causing with their family or relationships or whatever else it may be. So like, you know, the individuals that are, you know, within the family unit or of the addict or the alcoholic, it's like, what can you do, you know, to stay strong and have a support system and learn how to navigate those waters that are so, you know, there's no, like we said, there's no map for this stuff. So it's like, you know, resources like Voices Encourage or Al-Anon or a therapist or a community or taking care of yourself, like to be able to best your mind, your body, deal with the stress and the challenge and the emotions that do go through with, you know, living with or trying to help a addict or alcoholic is really kind of like, you can only control your side of the street.
Exactly. Right? So you actually said in one of your interviews, the hardest part was what I did to my parents. My parents did everything for me. And that's a hard statement to make. And it's a pretty courageous thing to say out loud, because there's a lot in that, in those words. What are some things that you know now that your parents have done for the parents out there that, you know, have helped your parents be successful to maintaining their own identity through the chaos? Because it's so easy to make your identity a part of the disease, right? Because it's just, it's there, right? Mm-hmm. And so did you notice that your parents got involved with Fitness Quest 10? You know, what are some of the things that your parents actively did that you're aware of that other parents can do? If you're aware of anything in particular that you know that was successful for them.
To be honest, like through those years of my disease, a lot of times it was like survival mode, you know, for my parents. And when somebody's suffering, like the addict or the alcoholic that is in their disease, they're going to isolate and stay away from the people that may be somebody that wants to help them or whatever. They're going to, you know, and the same thing goes for the people that are suffering in the family. Like, you know, my parents, that was something they did a lot through was not withdraw from life. Mm-hmm. And not want to answer the phone or, you know, be just, you know, isolate and suffer. And so I think that the times that they maybe were able to cope better than other times were times that they, you know, reached out to friends or went to see a therapist or do the things to help take care of themselves.
Yes. You know? Yes. And so kind of changing the chapter now. So we've talked about all the tough stuff. Now, one of the main reasons why you're here is because you're just kind of mentioned community. And that is what Fitness Quest 10 does best. And that's, again, why I keep coming back to you guys every when I'm in shape and out of shape, I keep coming back to you guys. And the reason why you guys are the best of the best, truly, is because any person who walks through that door, size, shape, you know, whatever, you grant them massive welcome, grace, and compassion by meeting them where they are. Yeah. And it's everybody's a part of the community. Mm-hmm. It's not the cool kids. And, you know, everybody's a part of the Fitness Quest 10 community. And one of the other best parts about it is that you guys take away the stigma of shame. You show up authentically. And I think that is one of the biggest things that we're trying to do with Voices Encourage, is to take away the stigma and to show up authentically and real to people that you surround yourself with on a daily basis. And that's what you've done from, I think, really, basically the moment you've pretty much stepped through the door. How do you think your presence there of authenticity, if you didn't show up the way that you've showed up, mm-hmm. how do you think the community in your space in the community would be different?
Yeah. You know, I think that, like, you're right, Jen, like the biggest thing that Fitness Quest 10, I think, offers anybody is that community. And that's what it provided for me as somebody who was newly sober, trying to get his life together and didn't have a purpose and didn't have a community of people that were trying to like lift each other up. And so when I started working here, I found that. And, you know, what a blessing it is to be able to come in here. And, you know, the first couple of years of sobriety, it's like I was filled with so much shame and guilt and embarrassment. And, you know, I wasn't like comfortable in my sobriety to be, you know, especially in so many organizations or communities. It's so hard, like, you know, like at a job place, you know, a workplace, or in your community of all the parents or whatever. You don't want to be that. That's always about putting on your best, like social media, put on your best.
Yeah, right.
You know, you don't want people to know what's going on with the family, right? Or what's going on. Like, and so for me showing up, I was in, definitely in that place. But then I found Fitness Quest 10 and I saw this community of people. And then as I started to work here and I stayed sober, I started to be open about my background and sharing it and, you know, becoming more comfortable and confident and whatever about it. And that has really allowed me to, you know, I think people appreciate that authenticity, like you said, and as a trainer, it's really helped me because, you know, people look at a trainer, people might look at me from the outside right now and be like, you know, he doesn't know what it's like to struggle with depression, or he doesn't know what it's like to, you know, struggle with weight loss or, you know, eating or, well, when people do know that the experiences that I've had, it's really helped me connect with a lot of my clients and people in my community on a much deeper level. And, you know, I can empathize with the parents that are going through a challenging time with their kid. I might have a client that's a dad that's, or a mom that's got a, you know, a kid that's struggling with whatever, you know, I still can empathize with that person because of, you know, the parent, I've seen my parents struggle, you know, in a major, major way. And so it's allowed me to have this, I think with my staff, my team here and with the community, it's allowed people love that. That's something that's so nice about going to an AA meeting. Sometimes, honestly, for somebody that's never been, and you go and you just hear people being real.
Yes. Right.
Open. You're like, whoa, like,
thank goodness.
Right.
Exactly.
And so it's kind of what I've done since I've gotten here, and it's allowed me to kind of be a source of, you know, as a trainer and a coach, right. You're trying to help your clients. Like me as a trainer and a coach, I'm trying to help them live healthier, happier lives. And a lot of that is, you know, as trainers and coaches, we're life transformers, right? That's what we're trying to do is, and that a lot of that can go way beyond the pushups and the sit-ups and the nutrition and all that other stuff, right? It's really more about life stuff. And so I think through my experiences, like I gained a lot of life experience in a short amount of time. You know, I saw pain and suffering and loss and all these deals and family struggles, you know, in my 20s. So that going into marriage and going into my young adult, like, you know, by the time I turned 30, I'd experienced a lot.
Yeah.
And so that's helped me just, yeah, I think connect with my clients and my community and my team a lot. And it's really helped me as a teammate and as a trainer or coach or a mentor. And
yeah, you set the tone, really. You set the tone of approachability. Mm-hmm. You know, because not everybody who's coming through the door, even though it's awesome to have NFL players, but not everybody's an NFL player.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the empathy part of you, I think, is one of your most outstanding qualities that you have. So I just want to let you know that I actually very much noticed that. A very important question I have for you, because I know we're running out of time here, that I want to make sure I touch on, is your relationship with Todd Durkin, because I know he's had a tremendous impact on your life, my life as well. I think he's an incredible human being.
Yep.
And you mentioned in some of your other interviews that you actually relapsed. I think it was the first year that you were working for Todd, and I'll let you speak a little bit on it, but what really hit me was when you said that he didn't give up on you. He gave you grace and compassion and time and patience. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of executives out there who find that some of their employees are using or, you know, active addiction or whatever it is. And Todd didn't give up on you. So can you talk a little bit about that impact on your life and how your life might be different if he didn't grant you that grace?
Yeah. Yeah. And that actually kind of goes even a little farther back, because the way that I, and this is like, you know, kind of like things, you know, the bigger things working in my life, you know, I had moved to San Diego and had gotten hired at a local company here and started to work here. I was trying to get my life on track, and I just started working there 2 weeks, did the orientation program, and I actually got let go because they did a background check. And so being let go from that company is what led me to look on Craigslist and find a job opening for a director of first impression at Fitness Quest 10. This is right after I just gotten let go by this HR department at this bigger company. And so I came in here, you know, with my, to Fitness Quest 10 with my resume, and met with Julie Wilcox, the general manager at the time, and had a couple interviews, and they offered me the job as a front desk director of first impression here. And I remember being super concerned and worried, like, oh no, like, what if they do a background check? Like, I need to set the tone here and meet this head on. And so after she had extended the offer to me, her and Todd had, you know, extended the offer to me to join the team, I had left the building, physically left the building, and I turned around and came back in and I asked her if I could meet with her real quick. And I just said, hey, Julie, you know, I want to give you the heads up that, like, if you do a background check, there might be some things that come up, because I had multiple felonies on my record from my 20s. She, you know, I think after several meetings with her and me coming in and doing interviews, she said, you know, Jeff, thank you for your honesty. You know, I think that, you know, there's a reason why we're hiring you. And this is how we're going to start off on the right foot.
Wow. What a pivotal moment. Wow.
Yeah. So that's how I got the job.
Yeah.
And I was newly sober. So it's like, you know, I had good things going on in my life at that time. Like I was dating a really special lady.
I've met her. She's wonderful. Sam.
She's a big reason of why I'm here today. And I was dating her. I got a job here, you know, despite my record and all the, you know, like that whole situation. And then, and I started working here, and I was working at the front desk, but I was still battling those.
Yeah.
I was, you know, the first year is just like, you're not out of the weeds. Like, you need so much. And there were some good things starting to happen in my life. And my wife went to grad school in New York. And after she left, I kind of had a little freedom. And within a short period of her leaving, I had been working here for 1 year and had my first year of sobriety, and she left for New York and I relapsed. And it took about 6 months for anything to happen, because I was using and nobody really knew around here. People, I think, looking back, knew something was going on, but my wife had, that's a story for another time, but she had found out in a terrible way. And she found out on Christmas Eve. This was 2012. Yeah. She caught me using on Christmas Eve. It was terrible. Ruined the whole, this was like another example of addiction ruining, you know, families. It was Christmas Eve. My wife caught me using. It was, you know, it ruined the whole holiday. And the next day on Christmas Day, my wife, Sam called Todd and told him that I was using again. And, you know, it's like people that, like my college coach or my high school coach or Todd or other people in your life, my parents, it's like, you don't know what to do with an addict. You know, they all loved me for who I was, like the person I was. And, you know, this Jeff right here, that's here today. They love that person. Right. So to find that, and then they find out like, what he's been using, like, okay. Like, you don't know what to do. So Todd sat with me right here at this desk. You know, this was Todd's office for many years, and he sat with me, and I was sitting across the way, and he's like, Jeff, I love you and we want to help you, we love you, but you can't be using and working. You can't be on drugs and working here. So what are we going to do? And, you know, Todd is such a like action man, like,
yes.
So like he set up a contract between me and him that said, you know, Jeff Bristol, I'm going to stay sober, you know, submit to drug tests if need be, go to meetings, blah, blah, blah. It was all these.
Wow.
And I signed that contract. But I've never been able to stop using on my own when I've been not in rehab or jail. Those are the only places when I'm, that's how, no matter what's going on or who's trying to stop me.
Yeah.
You know, and so I went on that contract, and I that was January, right at Christmas. And I went through January and February still telling everybody that I was going to stop. But I just wasn't, you know, and I was still using behind everyone's back. And I just, you know, it comes to a point where, and I went through it so many times that I just kind of like throw in the towel and say, okay. Like, and it was February 10th that, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I went to February 10th, and then I threw in the towel, and that was the last time I went to treatment. I went to a place up in Riverside I'd been before, actually. So you see, and that's the thing, you know, there's so many addicts and alcoholics out there that are good dads or good people or good husbands or wives or whatever that have a lot of potential and you know, they can end up on the street corner with nothing. And so that was another example of somebody just said, when I finally went to treatment, he said, Jeff, don't worry about your job. It'll be here when you get back, go off and, you know, go get some help. And I went to treatment. And at that time in my life, I was 29 years old, and, you know, sitting there, you know, when you're 29, you had all these friends that had built up lives and careers and families. And that's where it, something changed, I believe.
Right.
At that time and that in treatment where I was like, you know what, like I got a good life ahead of me if I want to live it.
Right.
Or I can continue living this life of, you know, pain and destruction. And so, you know, I got sober at 29 and it was when I got sober, you know, I didn't have any money, had thousands of dollars in court fines. I had no car, a record, but you know, I had my family. I had an amazing woman in my life and I had a career right in front of me that I could, that was there if I was gonna, you know, it's so hard to look back and say, you know, what was it? And, but I, you know, for me, it was a series of so many rock bottoms and experiences that led me to, you know, that being my last time in treatment. And so I got sober February 10th of 2013. And like they talk about the promises in AA, those have continued to happen for me. You know, I know life is tough. Like you go through life struggles, everyone does, but in sobriety, you're now I can be a source of support for my brother, my sister, my mom, my dad, my wife.
And so, they live with you. Your parents live with you now, right?
they do. Yeah.
Okay. How old's your son now?
He's 5.
So. You got a whole crew. You're taking care of everybody now.
yeah. No, it's a really special deal. You know, we asked my parents, me and my wife asked my parents to move in with us.
Wow.
My wife was, she's in a doctorate program right now and she's doing a residency up in Sacramento and flies up and back every week. And it's just, and it's been really cool. My wife, my parents have been able to move in with us, you know, live with my son and just develop this special relationship with him. And yeah, I am like motivated from those years that I put a lot of hurt on my family and drained them of everything. So now I'm like trying to be the son that I'm, that they raised me to be, where I can be a support for them and my siblings and my wife and my kid. And so I've been, you know, very lucky to have a family that I do. I know there's a lot of people that don't have that support out there and it's, you gotta find it, you know, whether it's through a church, AA, a gym, you know, people that are trying to get sober, whatever, voices encourage, like, you know, you find those, and it's different for everybody, right? Like people, I've seen people get sober through different ways, right? Yeah. You
know, I think I can safely say that you've surpassed your parents' expectations, just watching you maneuver during the day. I think you've nailed the head, you know, hit the nail on the head with that. So what I appreciate you, I know we're running out of time here. So I just wanted to say, you know, what I appreciate you is that, you know, I would, you know, we all have different peaks and valleys. And, you know, if you take a look at you, one could say that you're at the top of the mountain. And what I appreciate what you just gave us as a gift is you just spoke to us about all the peaks and the valleys, because it's not as interesting to see somebody at the top. People want to know how did you get there? Because right. The story lies in the journey of the ups and the downs and the peaks and the valleys. And it takes a courageous person to share that story. And thank you for sharing that with us today. And I know that you do it on a daily basis because I see it. So that's pretty impressive. And I'm sure you get this question all the time. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you that if there was one thing that I missed to that mom or dad or whomever, is there anything else that you would say as a piece of advice for the people who are still struggling out there?
Yeah. You know, never stop loving that person. And holding on to hope, even if you have to love them from a distance, even if they're lying and cheating and stealing from you, you know, like that's what addicts, I mean, not to label or say what everybody's doing out there, but you know, like, you know, don't give up on hope, you know, and take care of yourself and surround yourself with people that have either been through what you're going through or, you know, and just, you know, don't hesitate to reach out for help. You know, whether it's the addict or the family. And, you know, I'm always available here at Fitness Quest 10. And I love, you know, staying connected with, you know, addicts and alcoholics that are trying to get sober. I have a good, you know, network of people in sobriety and stuff. And so never give up hope and stay connected.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate your time and everything you do on a daily basis. And thank you for always
appreciate you, Steiner. Oh,
thank you. And if you live in San Diego, treat yourself. go into Fitness Quest 10, and they're the top 10, one of the top 10 gyms in San Diego. And I can attest that they truly are. It's not just the label. They live it every day. And if people don't live in San Diego, where can they find you on Instagram?
Well, my personal Instagram is at Bristol Fit, B-R-I-S-T-O-L. FIT Bristol Fit at Bristol Fit, and then follow our Fitness Quest 10 at Fitness Quest 10 Instagram as well. We have an amazing community and we put out a lot of good stuff, and I'm grateful to have you part of our community here, Jen, and thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. And if you do follow him on Instagram, I will just let you know, you'll be seeing the 5 a.m. group of, you know, stories of everybody lifting. That will get you moving in the morning.
That'll get you motivated. That's right.
Thanks so much, Jeff, for coming. We appreciate everybody being here today. And for all of you who are listening, please make sure that you continue to take a peek at Voices and Courage and all the people that we have in our community here to help you take it to the next step.
Thank you for all you guys are doing over there, Jen.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yep.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you, Jen.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, K.L. Wells.